Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
December 21st, episode number 71, Respect. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. Kevin England here. And today, I get to finally check a box that has been on a to-do list for a long time. In this episode, we're going to have a one-on-one conversation with Stan Wozzetowski from SNF Honey Farms. Stan, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You know, Stan, you've been an instrumental resource for beekeepers in this area for a good number of years, and I'm really pleased to have you finally on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been keeping bees, and a little bit about your operation here at SNF Honey Farms?
Well, I've been keeping bees for 60 years. This is our 60th year. We started our company with the family, all involved, our children, back in 1991. And we've been going with beekeeping supplies and equipment. And we were doing nukes. And now we're doing just packaged bees because I go to Florida for the winter. Then we bring up the packaged bees in the springtime. And we have a complete line of supplies, all the woodware, medical, anything that you need, sources of, you know, recommendation for keeping your bees healthy and strong. So we have everything A to Z. And the bigger items we don't carry in stock, but we can get them for you at a reasonable price. And our operation is pretty well going along because when we started back in years ago, some of the beekeeping suppliers kind of fell through the cracks and moved away from this area of central New Jersey, which we're in. So my son and I, we decided, well, we're getting bigger into the bee operation, so we figured, well, we'll start our own company. So my son David did all the footwork, and he started us off and got incorporated, and that's where we are today.
Yeah, 1991, but you've been keeping bees for 60 years.
Yes.
Those are different times. Tell us, if you can go all the way back to the beginning, how did you get started? How did you get interested? What was it like?
Okay, well, to get started, I didn't have any bees. My father didn't have any bees. And we lived in what we call it Green Old, New Jersey, which is now Bridgewater Township. It has its own post office and everything because our post office was Somerville, New Jersey. And that's where I was born. And then we had moved, after my dad got out of the service in World War II, we moved from Raritan, New Jersey, out to Greenhole. And he was in construction, and we finished the house. And we lived on a small parcel of land between two farms. One was a dairy farm, and one was a chicken farm. And we had a small piece of property in between. And there was a couple smaller little homes with, you know, maybe half acre, quarter of an acre, down in the area, close to Route 22. So what we did was, I used to go around with my Model A pickup truck when I was about, 15, 16 years old, living on a farm, and we had to pick up our trash because there was no garbage collection in those days. We're talking about the mid-50s, all right, right after the war. And I used to take care of the garbage, you know, kind of the local people, push ourselves, and take it to the landfill, and we'd have it there and buried. And I used to stop by this little old lady and a gentleman there from Europe. I don't remember where they were, but they were up in their 90s, I guess. And I used to stop by with my Model A truck and pick up their one or two bags of trash and take it back to the landfill and drive home. So the old timer says, come on, Sonny, come on, Sonny, I'll show you my garden. I'll show you my garden. Nice. I'll give you some vegetables to take home to your family because he had a lot of vegetables and they did a lot of canning. And he had these two upright European-style beehives. I guess they looked like outhouses when I first seen them in the garden. They looked like two outhouses. And he says, come on, Sonny, come on, Sonny. He says, I'll show you bees. I'll show you bees in broken English. And I could understand them. And, of course, being a boy about 14, 15 years old, I stood way back and I said, this guy is crazy, you know. He's there with a T-shirt, pair of dungarees and overalls, and he's talking to the bees, and no smoke, didn't use any smoke, and I'm standing back there observing and watching what he's doing, and he pulls out a tray of honey, and he says, come over, look, look, he says. And I'm getting a little curious now, so I come a little closer. I want to see what's going on. Why isn't this old man getting stung? Yeah, he has some magical powers or whatever, you know. I said, well, he's talking to the bees, and they're not bothering him, and they're very gentle. So this went on for about a year, and the next year I get more curious. The following summer, I'm back down there again, and he got the bees in again, and now I'm getting a little more really interested in it now. And he got me back to the hive. He says, come on, look, look, look. So I get a little closer, and I'm curious. And then I can smell that honey and nectar, the aroma of that nectar that they're evaporating, the honey, coming out of the hive. And I can smell that. Boy, it smells really good, you know, that smell of that honey being evaporated out of that beehive. And then he comes up, he says, ah, come on, closer. He says, they're not going to sting. And sure enough, they did not sting me. So I got closer and closer and curious, you know, as a boy of my age. And all of a sudden, here I am standing face to face with the beehive, the back end of it. And he works the bees from the back. He has like an old hinge lock, and he swings the door open. And you can imagine, like, you know, an upright, you know, outhouse standing
like a cabinet,
there on a miniature side, like a cabinet, all nailed together with all pieces of wood and nails and tar paper, shingles, whatever, to keep the bees dry. So I said, well, okay. He pulls out the door, swings the door open, rather, pulls the tray back, and it comes out toward you. So he pulled the tray out of the back, and all these bees are there. My God, there's must have been 60,000 bees on that in that hive that I'm looking at directly in front of me. And I said, man, I'm going to back up a little bit. No. He says, come closer. Put your finger in the honey. I push the bees away. Put your finger in there, and you taste the honey. And I eat everything, he said. Eat the wax, eat everything. So I put my finger in there, take a little taste. No. Go down deeper. Take more. And I put it in my mouth. I taste. Oh, boy, this is good. Really honey right out of the fresh out of the beehive. And then he tells me about all the, you know, what's going on a little bit. And I get curious all the time, and I want to learn more. So lo and behold, the old gentleman passed away one day, and his wife come out with the apron on and the babushka, you know, the old European-type ladies. Yeah. That's the way they were dressed, very basic, casual, nothing fancy, plain, very poor people. But they had their garden and they had their two beehives, and that's all they needed to keep alive, I guess. So she says, I could have the two beehives, that I was so interested, and he enjoyed having me there and teaching me about the bees for these one or two summers that I had visited him, picking up the trash. So I got all excited, jumped in the Model A truck, drove home, out to the farm.
We're driving
all through the fields
and
meadows, you know, going through the mud and dirt and everything else through the meadows, because it was pretty rough roads through the farm fields between the chicken farm and the dairy farm. But they let us, you know, drive our old cars there, and that's how I learned to drive on a 1928 Model A. No fenders, no just the seat and the box, and no fenders, no body, no chassis, just the motor and the steering wheel and the gear shift. And chains on, because we drove all through the mud puddles. So that's how we got started. I got to my dad, and I said, Dad, I said, so-and-so, the neighbor passed away, and then the lady says, I can have the two beehives. My father says, well, what are we going to do with the beehives? He said, I don't know anything. So my dad says, well, I wanted the bees. I said, he wanted me to have the bees, so I was all excited. So my dad says, all right, well, we don't know anything about bees, but we're going to learn together. So we went to, my dad somehow found out about a beekeeping supply company. It was called Sterling Pet Shop in Sterling, New Jersey. I don't know if it's still there or not. But anyway, we took a ride in the car and drove over, and he found some beekeeping supplies that they had sold, and told us what to do, and recommended my dad buy this book called ABC XYZ on Beekeeping. And we still have that issue today, and I pass it on to my oldest grandson.
Wow.
So he still had the original book, and my dad and I learned all about beekeeping, and before you know it, things were doing so good. We had so many swarms in the trees, and there was bees everywhere, the neighbor's yard, my yard, hanging in the bushes and in the willow trees we had. They were everywhere. So all of a sudden, we started to get our handle on this, what we were doing. And my dad kept reading the book, and we were learning together, because I was still in school. So he'd come home at night, and we would study, and, you know, we'd work it together on the weekends and learn how to catch these swarms and build up. And
Were you using Langstroth boxes back then?
Yes, we went to Langstroth hives. Yeah. We transferred them from the old wooden equipment that he had, all handmade, and they said, you've got to have the standardized equipment. so we could manage and control the bees.
That was a time when people from Europe probably had bees in their backyard as a practice. You had a garden?
Yes, they had a garden.
And you had hives, right? I would imagine it was...
And they canned a lot of fruit and berries and vegetables that were on their garden.
But unlike now, where people, it's boutique or something very unusual.
Right.
It was probably more common back then
Yes, it was very common then, yes. Yeah. It was very common, yeah, to have a couple beehives in your backyard. And of course, I didn't know anything about no rules or regulations or laws or anything, and there weren't any, you know, and they're still today very minimal, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of that's changed over the years.
So how many hives, 15 years old, how many hives did you get to, 15, 16, 17?
I got to about maybe 6 or 8 beehives, maybe tops. We had about 10 hives.
Yeah.
And we had lots of honey, put the supers on, fill them up, extract them in July, and put the boxes on, and we had a nice fall crop again.
Your father liked this?
And my father really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, matter of fact, he had... when we had sold that house, and we moved to North Branch from Greenholm, and on Route 22 and Garrison Road, where my dad built a home there from ground up, because like I say, he was a handyman in construction, and we moved the hives from Greenholm over to North Branch, and then we had, at that time, we run about 20 to 25 hives, and as the people drove down the ramp of Route 22, going on to Route 28 into North Branch from Somerville, they would see the beehives, and then people would stop by and ask if we were selling honey, but we weren't selling any honey at that time. But then the newspapers come along, and they seen all the beehives along the roadway.
Oh, anyway, really?
And they'd stop and interview my dad and take interviews and write up star articles in the Star Ledger. So we got pretty well popular known.
Well, that's pretty funny. Here we are, how many years later, doing a similar...
My dad had 25 hives of his own until he passed away.
Yeah.
And my son David was going to Round Valley Community College. They were just starting up. And he was taking courses after high school and learning about beekeeping. So he'd come home for lunch because it was so close to the college. And he would be there for an hour or so having a chat with my dad. And my dad sit there and just talk for hours with them, teaching them all about beekeeping. And he got interested, and he's still interested today. Matter of fact, he was... president of the Northwest Jersey Beekeepers Association when he had their 100th anniversary. At that time, he was served 2 years, and he's still interested today. And when he was in scouting, I was with the Boy Scouts. We had a couple of good troops here in Flemington because I moved to Flemington then. And what we had was a couple of Boy Scout troops, and he was active in them. And he worked his way all the way up to life, and I was helping him. I was a counselor for the merit badge counselor for beekeeping. So that's how I got involved with that.
Oh,
and there were several boys that went through with the Boy Scouts, but my son never made it to life because he got into school and, you know, he kind of dropped out. But I wish he would have gone to, continue his scouting. But
he's also a master beekeeper, one of the few in New Jersey.
Yeah, David's a master beekeeper. He took his course out in Wooster, Ohio. At the extension service out there. We had a conference for Eastern Apiculture Society, and we were out there, and he took his course there and became a master beekeeper, so he was really enjoying it. And at that time, he was doing very well, and then he was here helping me mentor my hives, because I had, probably 30, 40, 50 hives then, and I was building a house at the same time, plus working full-time in construction. So I don't know how I manage all these bees.
I don't know how you did it either.
I still can't figure that out. So we went from there.
Did you keep them primarily here on the property, or did you have outyards back then? Talk about, beekeeping's changed. So talk about how you evolved. You moved here to here, literally the home we're in, or did you live somewhere else in this area?
No, after North Branch, when I got married, when we've been married 51 years, my wife and I settled down to an apartment in Lebanon, New Jersey, on Route 22, not too far away from home, from North Branch. And we rented the place there for about 2 years. And then I decided to want to build my own home. And Dad says, yeah, you can build your own house. He said, I'll help you. So we worked together, and we left the bees at North Branch. But when we were building a house here in Flemington, I didn't move the bees until after I got settled in, because it took us about 1 year and 13 months to build this house. And then we brought the bees over, and split them and made the packages and the splits and divides, because we learned now what we were really doing with the bees, so we could increase our population of colonies. So that's what we did. And then I became really involved full-time with getting our numbers up here in Flemington. And then people would come by and they wanted to get bees for pollination, they wanted to buy packages, they wanted to buy nukes and all, and we never did all of that. So eventually, going to the different courses with New Jersey Beekeeper Association, we got deeply involved with the state level, and also my son being a president, we got involved with that end of it also, in addition to Northwest Jersey, which he was also a past president of Northwest.
So for the listeners, Northwest is one of the 10 branches of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association.
Correct, right.
And the New Jersey Beekeepers Association is the state level. And David was president of Northwest, but he was also president of NJBA also.
Northwest, he went to become state president. Yeah, they nominated him, And he became state president, because you can't hold two offices. You can't be a president and also a branch president.
So time frame of... first off, let me ask you a question. When did you retire? Not that you've retired, but...
Well, I retired 45 years in heavy construction. I finally retired, and that was in 2002. I retired, and they want me to stay on and be a foreman and do this big job over at Hurst Celanese. Now it's called Santa Fe Advantis over in Bridgewater.
Yeah.
And that was my last job. I retired there, and I said, it's my birthday. I said, I'm retiring the first of the year. And they said, no, you can't. And I said, well, I'm walking out. I'm leaving. That's it. 45 years in offensive construction. That says I got my beekeeping operation going, and that's expanding rapidly, and it's going faster than we want to expand. So I got to get a handle on that. So that's what I've done. I retired, and that was back in 2002.
So 1991, you started a commercial
became
operation.
Became incorporated, yeah.
Right, and then 2002, you retired, and you went into it.
Full-time,
all the way.
Right.
And for those of us who know you, you're like a pillar in the community here for beekeeping. So many people, you're kind of like the mayor of the region here, because everybody knows you, Stan, and you're selling equipment and you're selling bees, and you're really just such a outlet for support. I remember in 2008 when we started, March, Sharon took the beekeeper's class
for us. Right. I remember. Yeah.
And the person who she came to for support was
and
your grandsons who have followed. They came over one day and helped. They were, your one grandson is, went to school with my oldest and was really good friends. And he's been over the house a lot. And, so we know you in several ways, but, from that perspective, you're just Stan and Fran. Stan and Fran have always been around, and Fran is a big supporter also.
She does all our bookwork. She does all the bookwork and the computer work and all the taxes and all that paperwork and income taxes that's got to be done when you own a corporation. And also, she handles all the insurance and everything else, and some of the phone calls comes in, she can really give the people directions if I'm not here to answer them, because I will always return a call and try to help beekeepers. I was taught over the years by Jake Mathenius, a retired bee inspector right now, and I still see him today. He was bee inspector for 42 years for the state of New Jersey, the longest held position. And he didn't have a college degree or anything, neither do I. And he just learned by watching, keeping your eyes and ears open, your mouth shut, and listen to what they were telling you how to do. And that's how I picked it up, in addition to some of the books and my dad. We were mentors, and Jake would always stop by the house and say hi to Mom and Dad and look at the bees, have a cup of coffee and homemade cakes my mom used to make, and cookies. He enjoyed that.
<That's>...
He'd always stop by, see Stan Wozotowski. That's my dad, senior. So we had a lot of relationship there. And then Jake says, why don't you join the Beekeeping Association? I didn't know about no Beekeeping Association. So I says, come on up, we're having a meeting. So I... We're having a meeting with Northwest Jersey, and that was my first introduction into Northwest Jersey Beekeepers Association.
What was the time frame?
That was 1975, I believe, 74, 75. We're going back about 39 years now. And then Jake says, well, man, he says, you guys are really good. He said, you really know your bees. He said, learning that book, ABCXYZ, that's a good one, he says, and keep it up. He said, we need beekeeper like you. So we continued, and lo and behold, Jake became one of our very close friends, and he still is today. And we built a really nice relationship with him and his family. And
yeah, Jake has had such an impact on this region and you know, across the United States, people know him. I was surprised when I went to the American Beekeepers Federation conference of people from North Carolina and other areas who knew Jake, you know, and asked how he was doing. And he really did get around and make a significant impact.
Yes, he did,
You know, not only in our region, but in beekeeping overall.
He started the Eastern Apicultural Society, which there was no function at all, and he was one of the founding fathers of that. He started the Eastern Apicultural Society, which takes in all of eastern United States, east of the Mississippi and Canada, and also the Caribbean islands. And we still have beekeepers today that are still involved, and we're up to about 650 strong, maybe 700 members, the whole eastern United States.
Yeah, so you're an active participant in both the Eastern Apiculture Society and the American Beekeeper Federation.
Yes.
You attend these meetings not only on the East Coast, but you're flying to Canada, and you were going to go to the Ukraine there, weren't you, or something?
Yeah, we were going to go last year. Well, to start out with, Jake said, well, we got to form another, he was approaching and starting up a, he wanted to link the United States all the way across with a Eastern Apicultural Society beekeeping industry in the central United States, which now is the Heartland Beekeeping Association, and then the Western Apicultural Society, which Jake went over with about $2,000 or $3,000, and went over to University of Davis with Dr. Norm Gary at that time, was the entomologist, and he started them off at Western Apicultural Society with $3,000 and followed the same routes as they established for Eastern Apicultural Society. So now we have the whole eastern United States linked up with beekeepers, and our motion is to educate beekeepers throughout the state, whether you got one hive or you got 60,000 hives, which I know all these guys that are commercial level that got thousands of hives, and they treat me just like one of their brothers. I'm a beekeeper, and that's all they want to know. You're a beekeeper, you're part of this small little niche group. So thanks to Jake, he started.
I say to you that I felt like a rock star when I walked around with you. You introduced me to Sue Kobe and Kim Flottam, and you're like, hey, Kim, how you doing? Hey, Stan, how are you? You know, all these people, Medhat Nasser, and it was very funny, all these people that I read about and see in the journals and read in the bee culture and follow and whatever. You know them all, Stan. You've met them all. You've talked to them, and they know you. And
yeah, there's some...
it is pretty neat, all that stuff you go through.
Yeah, we're a small group. We're very close together, knitly associated with one another. We keep in touch with one another. Even get Christmas cards from them occasionally, and they'll give me a phone call, see how they're doing. I call them, see how they're doing. And it goes on from there. Talking about Sue Kobe, I met Sue Kobe when my son and I wanted to get interested in expanding our operation, and we wanted to get into instrumental insemination. Mm-hmm. And I get a phone call, and I call the Ohio State University, and Sue Kobe's on the phone. She says, I hear you guys want to take the short course in instrumental insemination. She said, it's a three-day course. So I said, yeah, my son and I both. She said, well, we're glad to have you on board. So she gave me the dates and the time, and we went out there in 1992 and took Sue Kobe's course. It was in July of 92, from July the 29th, 30, and 31st. So we flew out to Ohio, spent 3 days in Columbus, and I tell you, boy, what a course she has, and fantastic lady. She is very well known throughout the world for insemination.
She is. If you talk to anybody about doing the insemination process, they always refer back to her as the principal person who understands the premise. And that's, again, your connections. But wait, I want to go back to something. Jake pulled you in.
Jake pulled me in.
Not only did he pull you in, you were the president of Northwest, but twice.
But twice. Right?
Not once, but twice.
what happens in our association, we need a first, a second, and a third vice president, and each position holds 2 years. And then you have to, you know, step up. So what they call stepping up the ladder, you get your feet wet and you learn from the first vice, from the president to the first and the second and third. Well, I'm sitting back at the, way in the back room up in Warren County at the municipal building up there. And Jake says, look at this. He said, we have an open slate. We need a third vice president. And then I'm not going to leave this room. And when all you people aren't going home from this meeting until you decide you're going to have a third vice president. Let's see you raise your hands. Well, nobody raised their hands. And I'm sitting way in the back of the room, my wife next to me, and I think I had my son David with me. And we're just looking and listening. And Jake is the kind of man, says, okay, I know who I'm going to pick, and I'm going to nominate Stan Wojciechowski. Stand up. You're the next third vice president. I said, what?
Yay!
You're the next third vice president. I said, well, wait a minute. I don't know much about being running the association. I'm not into that. He said, no, you're the man.
Wait. What position do I hold right now? What did you say to me when I walked in the door? Congratulations.
Kevin Engel.
You know how I got that?
You're president.
Yeah, Fran did the same thing to me in a meeting. We don't have a third Kevin. You're going to be the third vice president. That's exactly how I got roped into this.
Jake is so happy when I tell him, and when I see him there, we sometimes get together for lunch. And I tell him what's going on. He's so interested in the beekeeping association. He's about 85, 86 years old, but he's sharp as a whip, and he knows exactly what's going on. He still gets the bee journals every month, and he abreast of what's going on with EAS and WAS, and he's just a wonderful guy.
That's great.
The way he was. And I think that's going to carry on with Kevin and our future presidents, because we don't have the officers. You're just going to have to point them out and pick them out and say, this is it. You're going to be it.
Yeah.
And get your volunteers and all your committees together. So it works very well. And we'll help you along. We'll mentor you. You know, you're not going to go in there cold feet. We've got your support. We have your support, and we're going to keep you going.
That is a good thing about Northwest, is everybody's willing to pitch in. And, you know, sometimes we get a little thin on help, but as soon as you ask, people rally. So, you were president twice.
Yes.
You didn't go to the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, but you were on the National Honey Board. How did that come about?
Right. Well, there was an opening on the National Honey Board for candidates from each state in the union to represent the National Honey Board. And we would be appointed as a delegate to represent your state, which I am, supporting New Jersey or representing New Jersey. So, you have to send in your name to the United States Department of Agriculture through the president of the association. That would be the New Jersey Beekeepers Association president. And they would submit the names to the United States Department of Ag. And then they would do a profile check on you. And you would have to fill out a questionnaire and see how knowledgeable you are on beekeeping, that you would be representing your state at the state, at the National Honey Board meetings, where you select the officers that were going to run for the following term. So, lo and behold, I filled out the application, and about four or five of us in there, six of us maybe, applications to go to the National Honey Board. So, lo and behold, I get a letter from the U.S. Department of Ag, and they said I was nominated, and I'm going to be the delegate for the Honey Board. So that all took couple of weeks to get all squared away, and then all of a sudden I get a phone call and a letter in the mail. I got a report to a meeting. All expenses paid, lodging, food, everything. So it was all set up for me.
When was that? What year was that?
That was, let me see now, that would be Honey Board.
After you retired or before?
No, this was while I was working. Yeah, I was still in construction. I was still working. And then I had these conference calls where they hooked up the United States between the Eastern United States because of the time zones. And then they had the Central, and then they had the Western. And that included Alaska and Hawaii also, and some of the islands. So we were on this chain phone call. I never did one before, but we learned real quick how to do it. And you had to be on and delegate. You couldn't miss any of these conferences. So they would have them during that course of the year. So that's how that all started. So we went I got involved in that would be around, again, here we go. I was nominated in 2001 to 2004 because it's a three-year term.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, well, my 3 years are up. I traveled around the country. I learned a lot, and I met a lot of beekeepers, commercial, hobbyists, sideliners, you name it, and all these big guys that in the national packers, importers. I met them all. And here I am sitting on a nomination committee. We had several meetings during every time I was there. We had media training. We were taught how to speak on the radio. We were taught how to speak on television, how to present ourselves, how to dress. So it was really, really
formal.
I didn't know
they got that extensive
to
it.
I did my 3-year term, and I figured, okay, I'm all done. I get back to my home and get to my bees and everything, because when they said they were having a meeting, you had to be there to represent your state. Otherwise, you know, you were just a bad rep for your people and your state representing New Jersey. So lo and behold, they renominated me again, and I went from 2005 to 2007. Because at 2007, I had one more year to serve, but they had a referendum where they didn't want us small beekeepers, sideliners, and hobbyists controlling and electing the officers to run the National Honey Board. So a referendum went through Washington twice through the Department of Ag, and then they finally, on the second time around 1978, referendum went through, and they beat us by 51%. So now the National Honey Board, they took all our money, all the assets, everything else, and rolled everything over and became the National Honey Board now, and that's the way it is today. And it's controlled 100% by your packers and your importers in the United States. And that's where we stand now. So
not
more
to put you on the spot, is that a good or a bad thing?
Well,
the sideliners kind of got...
I kind of think it was a bad thing because more or less we really kind of were told, you know, who to vote for. If the packers and importers, they got their own little board or clique, you might as well say. And we had the last word because we were hobbyists, you know, sideliners, commercial beekeepers, and I mean these commercial guys are really putting a lot of money into this association because they pay a penny a pound assessment. That's where the money was going. And that time, I was paying a penny a pound my assessment, too. Everybody that had produced honey had to pay a penny a pound to the National Honey Board. And that went for our research and development and promoting American honey. So that's how we stand today. And it still is functioning. The president is Bruce Boyington, and I still good friends with him. And I see him just about every year at Eastern Apiculture Society or the ABF meeting he'll be, or at Western Apiculture Society, and we're still good friends, and he's still running the board. And some of the other people I know are still on the board, which are doing a very fine job representing the United States industry and promoting buying U.S. honey as opposed to foreign honey. And that's where the problem comes in, because the importer packers make their money on imported honey coming from China, Vietnam, Asia, South America, the Philippines. It's all over the world. So we kind of didn't like that, but we had to take it and bite the bullet. So we promoting as much local honey as we could, buy local, buy U.S. honey. But people are starting to buy honey, and they're realizing that our honey is the best right here in the USA.
There does seem to be an awareness about that now concerning buy local and buy U.S. And I think some of the noise about tainted honey, sugar, not 100% honey coming from overseas, especially China, has made an impact on people's perception of that, and they want to buy U.S. local honey that they know is government certified as 100% honey, right?
Right, yes.
I heard some state stat lately, like 70% of all the imported honey is diluted in some way. I don't know if that's a proper number, but that seemed really, really high to me. But if it's true, what a
shame. I think that number, maybe not that high. I don't know the number, and I don't think anybody really knows. But thanks to more modern technology and testing facilities, now we're able to test the honey worldwide, and we can tell by the pollen in the honey, because there's grains of pollen in the honey, and you can tell exactly within a 10-mile radius anywhere in the world where the honey was produced.
The difficulty is, in order to keep it from crystallizing, they're filtering it so much,
right?
That they're filtering that honey out, and you can't detect it. And they're saying it's part of the process. I don't know why they
Well, we know that China is using some chemicals and herbicide, pesticide, insecticide on some of their crops that we banned here many years ago. But small traces of this are coming in when they test the honey into the United States, but it's acceptable. But then when they start adulterating the honey, then that's when we really get onto them. And also, some of these China and these other countries are circumventing our taxes and our tariffs coming in with the honey because they're bringing in by the shiploads. So if it's just coming in by the barrels, it's coming by boatloads into these
United States. That's crazy, isn't it?
So it's crazy. And they're circumventing it by coming out of country of origin, out of other countries, not mainly China, but they're going through. It's from China. Yes, we know it's coming from China, but it's circumventing the labeling when it goes through Vietnam or any one of the parts in Asia or the Philippines. And we're able to track it down now. So now we got a handle on it. We're going to try to really close that loophole, more or less, and get this honey to the right people at the right time and the right price, and we're not avoiding all these taxes like they are.
So you participate in the ABF meetings. How long have you been going back and doing that?
I've been a member of the ABF meeting now for EAS was first, and then I joined EAS first, and I've been there a member. And again, Jake Mathenius got me into that. He said, why don't you join EAS? So I joined ABS, and then he said, well, why don't you join ABF? So I joined ABF too. So that's how we got involved with ABF and EAS. Then I figured there was one more, so I might as well join Western Apiculture Society, which he started. So I've been a member of Western Apiculture Society since 1986, a member of Eastern Apiculture Society in the early 70s, and also the American Beekeeping Federation. I'm a member there now. So you're going back to 86. And 1989, I joined the American Beekeeping Federation. That's 30 years right there.
Wow.
So we got 30 years at ABF. And that's where I met all these entomologists and professors and all these experts and scientists and research people that are doing all the research work and advancing the industry as to be a good, healthy, strong industry in the United States, and local honey, and to keep our bees alive. So, as you know, many problems with the mites arrived from Asia. They came in 1986. Yep. And the first conference I attended was Western Apiculture Society meeting on the West Coast. My wife didn't like flying across the country, but we did. She's not crazy about flying, but she's used to it now because she travels with me quite a bit now.
30 years.
So, 30 years. And that's where I first seen at the University of Oregon, our first Western Apiculture Society meeting. And I heard about the parasitic mites, but I'd never seen them. And lo and behold, there they had them on the bee yard in Oregon State University in Corvallis. And really blew my mind to see these parasitic mites under the microscope in the laboratory and how damaging they were and doing a number on our honeybees. They were just biting away and sucking all the bodily fluids out of the bee, and the bee's life is shortened, and she just can't survive that kind of an attack. So that was brought from Asia, and now we got the varroa mite here all over the country, even in Canada, and we're trying to learn to handle and control that.
So thinking way back to now.
Yeah, to now, yeah.
Things have really changed, right?
Yes,
tracheal mites, varroa mites. Even things like hive beetles. Wax moth ever really a big problem?
No, wax moth was not a problem. As long as your bees were healthy and strong, and we had no problem keeping them healthy and strong because we didn't have all the heavy pesticide and insecticides, harsh chemicals that they have today. And now they got these new products, they're called neonicotinoids, and I definitely think that's affecting our bees. I go to a lot of meetings, I talk to a lot of people, and professional people, and scientists, and research. We sit there one-on-one and we discuss it, and yeah, they're doing a lot of research, but they're finding every time they seem to solve a problem, it's a whole can of worms, and everything pops out of the can, and we just can't narrow it down. So colony collapse disorder.
What do you think about beekeeping today? It's totally changed. I mean, you have how many yards, Stan?
I have about 8 yards in three counties.
You got bees all over the place, and you have your routine.
Right.
I know how you keep your bees. I've been around you enough to know what your patterns are and your behaviors and whatever. But beekeeping has changed, right?
Yes, it has changed over the years from 60 years ago. We had American foul brewed, which was very spotty. Very rarely we had American foul brewed. I can't remember ever having American foul brewed. I didn't really see it until I got more involved with the association when they brought samples in and showed us with Jake Mathenius and our other past presidents of the association. So I really picked up on that, learned about diseases, because it was in the book. We did read it, but we never really had any major problems with it. We had chalk brewed, which was another issue, but that wasn't very hardly even known, and the bees did very well. And the hive beetles, which came from South Africa, now they're pretty much throughout the country, and they were brought here from South Africa. So you see, over the years, we never had any really major problems, other than having enough equipment together to catch all the swarms that were flying around in the neighbor's yard. Feral bees were everywhere. So we had no problem catching feral bees, and people would call us up, hey, we got a beehive for you. We'd go over and get it and add it to our collection. Before you know it, we're, you know, 15, 20, 30 hives strong, and we're still growing. Wow. So, but we'd help out the people and do it as a favor. We never charge. We just go and do the service for the people and give them a jar of honey. They'd be happier. They'd want to buy a jar of honey. They were so tickled pink that somebody now is knowledgeable to save the bees. Of course, today it's like the bees on the endangered species list pretty much. But our government doesn't recognize it yet, but we're losing 160,000 to 180,000 colonies of bees a year. And commercially, the guy just can't stay in the business where all the medication has to be put on. So I met beekeeper a few years ago with this colony collapse disorder back in 2006, 2007. And these commercial guys from the Midwest and from the far west told me they lost over $1 million in 1 year. That's a lot of money to lose.
That's a lot of money.
And these guys are 5-6 generations of beekeepers. They just didn't get into beekeeping overnight. You're talking 4 and 50 year generations. These people know their industry better than anybody, better than Washington, better than a politician knows it. They know it heart and soul, and that's their livelihood, and that's their bread and butter. And when they tell me, Stan, they got tears in their eyes, they have to burn their equipment, it's a shame. And the bees are all gone and just folding up their operations and going out of business. And I know a couple here, a real smart guy on the honey board up in, Mr. Dolan up in New York State, did all the pollination for the New York State apples. And this year, his family just folded up last year. They retired. They just couldn't keep up anymore with the money that they were losing. So there's a large commercial beekeeper that served with us on the honey board, and now he's gone, he's retired, so nobody to take his place that I know of. I don't know how the apples are gonna get pollinated up there, but it's a big, major loss when you lose people like that that have been in there for all their life, you know?
Yeah, it's a sad story, the whole thing. You're making changes in your operation. I see out here in the yard, you're rearranging stuff and doing things. You said before you're going to scale back a little bit.
Yeah, I'm getting up in age. I'm 75 years old. I think I got to slow down a little. Yeah.
You go like a 40-year-old.
But, well, we go to Florida for the winter, and we stay down there for the winter because I do a lot of fishing in the Gulf of Mexico. We're on the Gulf. And we have a little place down there, and I enjoy getting out and socializing with our friends and some of our friends we met down in Florida, and some of our friends retired there down there. And we get together occasionally, a couple times a month.
I like your commentary about the beekeepers down there. Keep trying to talk you into running an operation down there, huh?
Yeah, beekeepers know I'm down there. Not some of them I know very well. And one of them was about 45 minutes away, David Hackenberg. He's got a big operation out of central Pennsylvania. And he pollinates the citrus down there. And he goes up to Maine with the blueberry and up and down the East Coast. And him and his son, Davey, we met them, became very good friends with his family. And they're 45 minutes away, so we get together once in a while. And then Davey says, hey, come on one day and help me work my bees. So we got several semi-loads going to California, and we need some help. So I said, all right, I'll tag along. Be there 7 o'clock in the morning. Okay, I'll meet him at the farm. And we drive down about another hour and a half south into all the citrus that you can imagine. As far as you can see, there's nothing but citrus in Florida. So we stop at the bee yard, and everything is automated on trucks and wheels. Everything's mobile. and all the syrup is there, all the feed is there, all the pollen is there, the patties, everything is all made. They do it all preparation, and they get these bees ready to go, and they put out about 540 colonies of bees on a semi. And what they got to do before they load them up going to California, we got to take them off the pallet. There's four to a pallet, four boxes of bees. Take those boxes off, put them on a brand new pallet, fasten them down, and check them for the queens. Make sure you got 6 to 8 frames of brood. If not, the bees don't go to California. You have to pick them and select the weaker ones and unite them and make your 6 and 8 frames of brood. Make sure you got a lot of bees in them. And
you're mixing the bees right there?
You mix all the bees right in the yard as you're flying, yep. They're flying all over the citrus and all over you and everywhere else. There are bees everywhere. We loaded up
fully suited, I'm assuming?
Pardon?
You're fully suited, right, doing all this?
I had a veil on.
Yeah.
I had a veil on.
How many times did you get stung that day?
You know, I don't remember I did get stung. I don't remember.
You said Dave Hackenberg.
Dave Hackenberg, yes.
From the movie.
Yeah, Dave right? Hackenberg. He's well known across the country. Yeah. He's one of our good friends.
Yeah.
So, lo and behold, we managed, and he said he signed me a job, and I was to feed the bees. Okay, so they went through, they manipulated the hive with the, we had about maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 crews there. Each one had about 2 or 3 people on a crew. And all of a sudden, this van pulls up in the middle of the orchard. And I said, well, here, we got company. And so we went there working the bees, and these people came up, a young lady and a fella, and lo and behold, they're from Germany, and they were going to interview Dave Hackenberg and his pollination operation. So
wow.
David knew they were coming, but I didn't know they were coming. And we sat there, and I had a lunch real quick for about a half hour. He had a sandwich for us and a glass of Coke or Pepsi we had, and an apple, and that was about our lunch, a half hour, right back to work again. So Davey went on talking about these people, their interview, talking about bees. And he said, you keep working, you guys, keep working. So we kept working. He told us what to do, and I was feeding the syrup to them. They had a feeder in there, and I would feed them the syrup. There was 2 feeders in there, one on the right, one on the left, and we would feed them corn syrup. And then all of a sudden, the bees were ready to go on a new pallet, 6 or 7 frames. The queens were good, and we would put the I would be there with the 300 or 500-gallon tank on the back of my pickup truck, because everybody had trucks, and we would fill them up, and that was my job, the last one, to feed the bees, put a big pollen patty on there about the size of a large, extra-large pancake, and we slapped that on the top, and then a guy, crew would come behind me with the screw guns, because everything is screw guns, and they'd screw the lids down, what they call a migratory lid. And they load them on a tractor trailer.
Oh, they screw them down.
Yeah, we screw them down because of the, they're going to be traveling 3,000 miles across the county.
You don't want them bouncing off.
So they don't want
them
bounce all around. They don't use the telescopic top. They use a western, you know, a migratory cover. So I learned a lot, and we worked 500 hives that afternoon. We got them ready for the bee inspector to come early in the morning at sunrise to inspect them. The truck drivers were there in early in the morning at sunrise. Because they would just back up the trucks to the trailers and hook them up to semis, throw the netting over them. The bee inspector was there from the state of Florida. He would inspect them. And then off they would go on a 3,000-mile journey to get to the almonds in California. And that's still done today. But, of course, this year is going to be the first year they will not have enough bees to pollinate the almond. I believe the numbers are 1.8 million colonies of bees need to be pollinated for the almond this coming year in 2015. And there aren't enough bees in the whole United States to do that job.
Wow.
And that's where the money is, but now it's gotten very expensive, and the bees are coming out sick, and a lot of percentages of the bees are sick, and they're very weak. To recover them, to bring them back to Florida, 6 weeks they come back to Florida, and then Davey starts them splitting all over again and gets them ready to go up the East Coast and into the country, into Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and New York State, and all the way up to Maine to pollinate the crops.
The almond thing was bad to begin with, right?
Yeah.
You're putting them on monoculture.
Yeah.
You're bringing them all together. You're stressing them.
Right.
But apparently over the last 2 years, they've changed whatever they're spraying on the plants out there, and it's made the bees sick. So
they're using some new product.
They're using new stuff,
yeah,
which is making...
Stuff, right. Yeah.
How bad can it be if you stand in there? You just shake your head and say,
yeah.
How the heck could this... How could that be true? So
it's true. You can read it in the bee journals, and you can attend the meetings. And you go to ABF meeting. It's going to be held in Anaheim, California, at Disneyland. That's where we're going to be.
You're heading right after Christmas. You're heading down.
Heading down to Florida.
To Florida, and then you're flying over.
Open up the house down there and get everything up and running for a few days. And then we got a plane flight out of Tampa to Houston, Texas, right into Anaheim. So we'll be there, Orange County Airport, and we'll be done in about a week and a half there. And we'll be learning a lot more about the how many more bees we lost. You know, of course, that's not a good thing. We always, sorry to hear that, but I know over the years, my experience, that we keep losing bees, and these new products coming out, we're trying to get a handle on it. Our researchers are wits end. I wish we had more people in the laboratories and getting involved in beekeeping and research, and also with the chemicals and the pesticide and the herbicide and insecticides. And also, we're losing a lot of our apiary, inspectors are retiring. Because of the money and a tight budget, some of the states are just retiring and closing up their bee inspection program, so they're abolishing that. So a lot of the states are not having any more bee inspecting programs, so we can't keep our bees healthy and strong and keep a number as to how many bees are in the United States and in each state. Right now, I'm renominated again for the New Jersey Beekeepers Association. I was just at a meeting last Wednesday. Now it's called the New Jersey Advisory Board Beekeepers Meeting. So now I'm involved again. They brought me back to her advice, I guess, over my experience to be on the advisory board for the New Jersey Beekeepers. And we met down there with the commercial blueberry growers and the commercial blueberry growers and cranberry growers. They were right side of me, one on each side of me. To my right was Bill, and to my left was Paul. Paul is a big commercial blueberry grower down in Hamilton. And also Bill is up a little bit in the ponds in the same area in the Pines. He's works for, it's a co-op with Ocean Spray. So they didn't lose too many bees with the cranberry, but we noticed inspecting the bees, and the blueberry farmers were saying they had a poor crop this year, and also our bees came out of pollination very poor. There was like a 30% to 20% came out unhealthy. We don't know why. They did tell us that they tried some new product. We think maybe that was a spray problem, or maybe it wasn't. The weather was a big issue. We talked about the weather in New Jersey at that time of the year when the blueberries came out.
You know what, think about this. Blueberries are late spring, early summer?
Yeah, May and June.
So we had a great spring this year.
Yeah,
but the,
we did. Yeah.
But May, June, July, August was dry as can be.
Horrible, Right. So like I say, the blueberries, they said they did good, but the cranberry growers were disappointed with the pollination, and the crop was down. Some of the flowers were wilted. They had the tops bent down and closed partially. They don't know what caused that. So they had seen it in the past years, but not this bad. So we don't know what's causing
that. In the flower being closed, keep the bees from getting in?
We think maybe the bees couldn't get in there, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the heavy, wet weather, yeah. There was a crazy weather, spring. But anyway, we had the board meeting, and we're going to do a lot of research and find out. And again, here we go. The farmers, the growers, and the beekeepers, we have to unite and work together to solve these major, major issues and these problems. He's out there paying good money for us to bring the bees in and get a pollination. He wants the pollination done because he wants to get a good crop. If he knows if he don't have the bees in there, he's not going to get very much yield at all.
Yeah.
So he definitely knows that they need the honeybees for the blueberry and the cranberry.
So how do they, let's recognize something I brought up on a previous issue.
Yeah.
You were instrumental in the conversation we have with our local farmers, right? You and I and Bob Kloss went to speak.
Yes, we did.
And you're involved in this. Are they following good practices there? I mean, the conversation we had about pollinator rows and pesticides and things like that. Did they know these things? Would that be an opportunity?
Well, we mentioned about when you put the bees into pollination, you want them on the target, and the target would be the blueberry. So you want to get as many hives as you can in there, like about two hives per acre. to get the bees to pollinate the flowers on the blueberry. But if you have an outside source of better nutrition and a better nectar source, a sweeter nectar source than what the blueberry has, those bees are going to forage around that perimeter of your target zone, which is your, you know, blueberry. So what they're going to do is go to the outer perimeters. So they're going to, you know, bring all that nectar in around them, and they're not going to really function and pollinate the almond or the blueberry like they should be. So that's an issue that was brought up, and they said there wasn't much there because they watch and control the outer perimeters of the blueberry field.
Plus, the operation has to be going year after year after year. Yes. It's not like you can move blueberry plants. So whatever they had in the past should continue to work.
Right. But for some reason, this year the crop went down, and also the honey crop went down by the blueberries.
Yeah.
So both we were both hurting, blueberry growers and also all the bees.
It's like a big nasty puzzle, isn't it?
It's a big puzzle. We can't figure out all of what goes on. Of course, the Mother Nature is not telling us everything. We can't figure it all out.
So let's talk about, I want to switch gears for a second and talk about beekeeping in the box, Stan. You in the box with your bees.
Right.
You're out all the time, you know, working with customers, whatever, but it has to be. Do you still get pleasure when you go out to a yard and you're out there by yourself and, I get poetic, being in nature and opening the hives and hearing the buzz and looking at the frames? There's still got to be enjoyment after 60 years?
Yes, I enjoy it, and I enjoy the outdoors. I was offered to go to college for free in one of the farms, states that I worked on when I was a kid, getting $1 an hour, and they wanted all the employees and all the hired help on the estate. They would pay all their tuition, everything, 100%, for the children, if they wanted to go to work on the farm, to get a free education, and they would pay for it, because these people had a lot of money, and they wanted to see the kids get ahead. So I was called in one day by the owner, and we sat down, and they asked me if I wanted to be the next candidate, because every year they sent one of the boys or girls, you work for them for 4 or 5 years, and you would be offered the opportunity to go to college. And I said, no. I said, sir, I'm not interested in going to college. I'm an outdoor person. I can't see sitting in a laboratory or in a little cubby somewhere working the rest of my life for 30, 40 years. I think I want to be outside. I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love to trap. And I love my bees. And I says, I'm an outdoors person. And I says, thank you for your offer. I really appreciate it. But I says, I don't want to waste your money. And I denied going to college. And he said, don't worry about it. If your grades aren't good, we'll send you to prep school in Princeton, one of the good prep schools, and we'll prep you and we'll get you ready to go to college. So I turned it down, and I'm glad that I did.
Yeah.
Because I enjoy the outdoors. I go outside today. My bees are flying. This is, what, December the 15th? And I just walked around before Kevin came and checking my yard, and all the bees are flying. I couldn't believe that, you know, one day, here they are flying. But I looked at each one, and lo and behold, I was so happy to see that they're flying, and that means they're alive and they're doing well. So I kept my part of the bargain up till now, and I do what I can do. And when I get home in springtime in April, I bring back 450 packages of bees with my son. We stop at the Georgia-Florida border, load them up, and we drive up for our customers, and also to increase our losses here in New Jersey, because we're averaging about maybe a 30% loss, 33%, I figured. Normal loss is about 10%.
Yeah, you're covering the losses, right?
We're covering the losses, yeah. And bring up extra bees for new customers and also replacements for people that want to expand or replace some of their overwinter losses.
You've had some interesting, knowing you and hearing your stories on occasion, you've had some interesting things happen. Bringing the bees back. One time you had an incident?
Oh, yes. If you think you can just drive down there and pick up, you know, 400 or 500 packages of bees and drive home, it's a little tricky. Everybody says, well, I can do that. Well, yeah, you buy a pickup truck and you buy a trailer, and you can go down and haul bees. Just call a year ahead of time and order them, because you get a guy on a list, and they're not going to take you anyway, because unless they know who you are and you get established in their recommendations, that they're going to sell you their bees. So you got to really know the people down there and know the industry in order to even get your foot in the door with these breeders. And everybody wants them up here April 15th. Of course, When we did the nukes, when we were up here living all year round before we went to Florida, I would do maybe 100, 150 nukes. I'd get in touch with our neighbor, George Schaefer, and his son, George Jr., and we would work together, and we could both put out 100, 150 nukes together and have them all ready to go, but it was usually the end of April or beginning of May because of our weather up here. So going to Florida, I don't have the time to take care of all the preparation work in January and February that needs to be done to build them up. So I decided to bring up package bees, and I went into the package bee industry. And
how did you do the nukes? Did you do them
the previous? Nukes, yeah.
You do them in the fall?
Yeah.
Do your splits or whatever, let them overwinter?
Overwinter, yeah.
Did you overwinter them in nuke boxes or split
deeps? Yes, I've wintered them over
or?
In nuke boxes, yeah. You can overwinter them in nuke boxes, yeah. You can overwinter them in five-frame nuke boxes, two stories high, and they will do sometimes very well as opposed to a two-deep brood chamber.
Yeah. You stack them together, like next to each other?
You can put them all together, yeah, and then kind of wrap them with styrofoam to keep them warm because they're only, baby nukes, they're only five frames.
But, what do you think, and I'm going to go in a weird direction here, but the package bees versus the nuke bees, do you think there's... You know, people do well with packages and some people don't do well at all. I don't know what the answer is there or what the recommendation is anymore about that because, there's good queen breeders out there and there's good package providers that make sure their queens are mated and their bees are healthy and all that.
Yes, right.
And there's ones that are not. Right. I know the ones you're working with, well-established.
Yeah.
A lot of history and have a good operation, that type of thing. But new people that are trying to get in and buy packages through the mail or whatever, they sometimes have a rough go at it, Where if you're starting with a nuke from a local source, you generally do better off. But they're more expensive.
They're more expensive, yeah. And with a nucleus, a hive is like half a beehive. You're getting either four or five frames of bees, what they call a nucleus, and it's already drawn foundation. The queen is laying eggs. You got honey, nectar, and pollen will be coming in at that time of the year. As opposed to getting a package, you only have 3 pounds of bees with a queen in the cage, in the cage, and you have a quart of syrup in there. So what you do, you got to empty the bees and dump them out of the package and put them into your super, and you have to feed them. If you got new foundation, it's going to take them several weeks, so what you got to do is feed them corn syrup or sugar and water to stimulate so the wax glands on the female can secrete the wax that they need to build the foundation so they can deposit the nectar in. Because as soon as you put them in there, they're going to start working and foraging right away. And I've done comparisons. I've done nukes. I've done packages. And I'll tell you, if you get a good, strong package of bees, which they're always like 4,000 bees to a pound, and they always give me extra bees. They always make sure that they don't get caught on the scales getting weighed and the bees are short because sometimes the people will have them checked at a weighing station and the bees are a little under. They won't be quite 3 pound bees. So I know my breeder always packs extra bees in that box. So you're getting more than what you're buying for. But the thing is, you got a good strong queen. And some years the weather is bad down south. The bees aren't mated properly. Then the queens aren't mated properly. So what happens is you're going to get a poor queen that's going to supersede. And supersede is mean they're going to make another queen. So if you're a beekeeper, you have to know and keep an eye on what's going on inside that hive. Every 2 weeks, get in there and look whether you got a package or you got a nuke. It don't matter. Every 2 weeks, you should get in there and look around, see what's going on. Make sure you got the eggs. And make sure you got a good, viable queen. And she's really taken off. And I've had people come to me and say, Stan, I want to buy another package because I took 60 pounds of honey off of your package bees last year. I said, well, that's fantastic. I said, well, that's a good record. I said, some years they come and they tell me that they only got enough honey to support to keep them alive. I said, well, you look at the weather, look at the foraging. Did you look at the bees? No, I put them in a box. I forgot about them. I didn't look for them 6 months later.
Yeah.
And I said, that was your mistake. So that's what I said. You got every 2 weeks, get in there and check on the weekend, Saturday or Sunday or whatever, and take a peek, see what's going on. And
I think one of the key things is you're bringing your bees up for an April 15th delivery. That's right at the heart of the nectar flow here.
Well,
there's people who are taking their bees and putting them in a box on May 30th.
And they're just not going to do well because that's the end of the flow, and they're in the dearth, and you got to feed them. And even so, the food out there is it's just not the right quality for them.
The source starts to dwindle. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's you get a good year and your bad years. New Jersey this year was a very good year. We had a lot of honey, and everybody told me whether they had a package or a nuke, and they managed their bees because they joined the club, they went to the meetings, they took our advice, and our mentors really got them along with these new beekeepers. And lo and behold, the first year beekeeper, and they're coming to me, telling me, Stan, I got 30 pounds of honey.
That's good.
That's great, you know, because people, if you don't take care of it and don't come to our meetings, well, you're going to fall through the cracks in the floor and you're going to lose your operation, you know. And we don't want to see you lose your bees and your beehive. We want to see you enjoy it and have fun and learn and experience, because it's not all in the books, believe me. I read a lot of books and I'm still reading books and I get the journals and there's still all the answers aren't there. So
still learning experience even after 60 years, right? You and I had this conversation about...
It's not all in the books. It's not on the computer. And a lot of stuff on the computer. You know, when you read the computer, you look at the computer, these people are putting all this together, and maybe they're 1 or 2 years experience and they're all of a sudden professionals. And I even have some people that are going to go into beekeeping supplies and equipment and give me competition, but that's all right. Then, you know, I don't worry about them.
Yeah.
I don't worry about my competition. I let them worry about me. So
we have a meeting coming up here in the spring where we're doing the state level meeting. We're bringing in a special guest, and it's going to be June of next year. We were talking about doing a bee beard.
Yes.
You've done bee beards in the past. You're going to be our mentor for this.
Yeah, I do bee beards. Yeah, I've done bee beards out on the West Coast. And all our conferences in WAS, we always did a bee beard. And that was one of the things that they, big highlight. They would have the television, local TV stations come in and do a live bee demonstrations and putting on bee beards. So it would be on the news that evening on the TV, local stations. And we did it up in Vancouver, British Columbia. We did it in Oregon. We did it all of our meetings. I don't remember we did it in Alaska, but we did it in Hawaii. Of course, you know, they're all our Western apicultural states. So, we put a lot of bee beards on. One afternoon, we had to put on 37 bee beards at the University of Simon Fraser in Vancouver, B.C. And that was the most I ever seen and helped put on in one day. It was an ideal, perfect day, and we had plenty of bees at the university to do all of that. So we had a wonderful, great day, and I think I got stung all after it was all done. We're putting the bees away, and I got one sting.
That's pretty good. I understand you got snuck in to get your own beard.
Yeah, then I got my own beard. How I did that was I made a deal with the professors. I said, you know, I'd like to do a bee beard. And they said, okay, you want to join the club, because they give you a medal that you remember the WAS Bee Club. You put on a bee beard, so they give you a medal, a little button. So I talked to one of the professors there, and he said, yeah, Stan. I said, how are we going to work this? Because they got a line up with caution tape for the audience, because it's on a big athletic field at the university. And all the bees are at the far end, all on the stakes, and they have all the bees there in boxes ready to go. And they're all well-fed and weeks ahead of time. They're all prepped, so we got all the young nurse bees and not the the foraging bees. I had spoken to them, and they said, yeah, we said, we can do it. How are we going to do that? So I set it up the night before, and I said, well, you can tell my wife when you come up to me. I'll be standing there with her with the camera, with the video. And she says, Stan, we need you to come up and help administer and put on bee beards for some of the demonstrators we're going to do. We need some help. So I said, okay, yeah. So my wife looked at me. She says, well, yeah, all right, you can go and help, but you're not going to put on a bee beard, are you? I said, no, we're not putting on no bee beard on me. Lo and behold, it was already set. It's set in. So all of a sudden, my wife is standing behind the caution tape with the camera, and she sees me starting to put a bee beard on. It's all around me. It's putting a bee beard on me, and all these four or five other ladies are there. I got a picture of it in the barn. And we put on a bee beard on me. And I said, oh, my God. She said, my husband's going to get stung to death. I'm going to be killed. He's going to die out there. So we made it through the day. It was good. But my wife said, you stinker, you. Had planned that all plan with the professors. I said, yes, I did.
That's pretty
funny. That was my first bee beard.
I'm sure she forgave you. Long since.
Yes, she did. She even gave me a kiss.
Yeah, Fran's the best. She's just... as sweet as could be, no doubt. You You've done a number of meetings or whatever. I know you were telling me about doing demonstrations up on a stage inside of a building.
VFW
and stuff. So what haven't you done? Is there anything left that you want to try?
I know I've pretty much tried it all, I guess. Yeah, we asked permission at the VFW in Manville, which I'm a life member, and I said, we'll have a state meeting. They said, well, we have about 150, 200 people coming. They said, yeah, no problem. The hall holds 1,200. We'll get you in there. So we booked the date and all, and we have the state meeting. Everybody comes from all over the state. And we're doing, with Jake Mathenius, we had the bee cage, which the state has. They built a bee cage, and it's all closed in with a screen. So they said, we'll do a live bee demonstration on a stage where the band plays. So we set it all up. They came, set it all up, and I brought the bees in. And we did a live bee demonstration inside the VFW.
That's cool.
Right up on the stage.
Yeah. That's pretty neat.
And then everybody didn't hear about it in Manville and Somerville. They all wanted to come to the meeting. I said, why didn't you tell us they were having the bees in the VFW? They said, we would have been there. So it really took off. We made the newspapers that day and everything. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we've had a lot of fun, Stan. You've always been that principal person that's always been... Mm-hmm. Either in the front or the back, it doesn't matter, supporting the Northwest Association, supporting the beekeepers around here. We refer a lot of people to you, and they always come away with a great experience. And SNF Honey Farms, still keeping it going. What's your plan for the future? How long do you think you'll...
Well, I'm trying to get my grandson interested, and my son is back into it again. He's up to 25 hives now, and he's got a place up in Tewksbury, and he's running 25 hives. And he had a little incident. He had a spray program, so he lost a few hives this year. But he's already planning on building up and getting him a new location and getting him out of where he's got
He had now. That twinkle in his eye when I saw him last time. He's got the bug again, huh?
He's got the bug
again. He's been away for a little while.
He's back into it again, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing I'll mention was when I was on the honey board, I was approached and doing a venue in New York because they know I'm from New Jersey, and the beekeeper they had from New York was upstate, and he wasn't too familiar with Manhattan and the city of Manhattan. So they said, Stan, could you help us out? So I said, well, what do you need? He says, well, we need to set up a program where we have 32 editors from different magazines throughout the United States. They're doing a venue in the summer, and we always have them come into New York City, and they come in from all over the country, and they do their articles, and they sit there and look at these videos and on a screen on their TV, and they show about all beekeeping, how it's done and everything else, and the people get bored. The editors wanted the honey board wanted some real live action that they can actually see inside of a beehive instead of looking on a screen and a video. So they asked me to do it. So I said, well, let me check around. And I checked with a couple of places. Because I managed bees for Mrs. Merck, who is Merck Pharmaceutical. She has a farm up there. And I managed her bees. And she said, well, I'll give you permission. You can bring in the people, and I'll let you come in on our property and open up your beehives, and you can show them and demonstrate, inside of a beehive for all these editors from these different newspapers throughout the country. I think there was 32 or 35. And I said, well, all right. But then at the end, I thought, well, maybe that wouldn't be appropriate because I had to also feed them. And I was saying, well, am I going to get a place to feed all these people, So I thought about it for a moment. So I made another contact. I went over to Duke Farms over in Somerville. And Duke Farms has 2,500 acres of all nice land. And that's Mrs. Duke, Doris Duke. She had just passed away a year prior to that, and the whole state is in a foundations, many a different fund and foundation that she had, it was in her will. So I approached them, and I went in with Robert Szymanowski. We met the head honchos and was taking over and getting everything up and running. And we actually had a meeting with the board, and they said, we'd like to do a live bee venue with honeybees. And he said, well, that's interesting. And he says, we can maybe work something out. So I got all these people coming from the National Honey Board. So I said, well, you set up a date and a time, and I'll have the honey board fly out from Denver, Colorado, and we'll meet with the head people, and I'll be there with you, and we can set up a program. And lo and behold, they went for it, and we did all the paperwork and everything else necessary, and the venue was taking place in Manhattan, and then we got Grant Stiles involved, because they wanted to see a honey operation for extracting. So, yeah. So I don't have all that facility. That
so get Grant is a large commercial.
So Grant Stiles is a large commercial beekeeper in New Jersey, one of ours.
Is he the biggest, do you think?
No. Dottie Harvey.
In New Jersey?
Harvey's honey.
Harvey is?
Harvey's yeah. number. He's number two. But mm-hmm. he's catching up. They're pretty much close and close. So anyway, they hired the buses and everything else. They did their presentation real quick in Manhattan. Bus them out to Fords, New Jersey, where Grant Stiles is. And Grant Stiles had open house and showed them all about honey, how it's extracted from when the time we take it out of the hive and we extract it to we bottle it. So they got samples and all that and everything are there. Then they put them on the bus and they left Fords, New Jersey, and they came to Somerville, New Jersey, to Duke's Estate. And I had, I believe, four hives there all set up. And the caretakers and all said, whatever you want to set them up, you set them up. We'll mow the lawn. We'll make it meticulous for the people to walk in so they don't get dirty. We're going to go through the Japanese gardens and we're going to come up the main house after you're done with them. The buses came right up, offloaded them. The honey board hall had all the veils, the suits and everything for them. We suited everybody up with 32 suits.
Wow.
I mean, like heavy armor, all the veils, gloves and everything. And here I am in my t-shirt, dungarees, nice, beautiful someday. And they all got off the bus and I introduced myself and they introduced and Grant came along with them. And he said, this is the beekeeper that's going to show you all the bees. We're going to open up his hive. And he says, okay, Stan, you start your demonstration. So I smoke the bees a little bit and explain how I'm going to do it. And they're all in a circle all the way around me because they figured they're not going to get stung. They can't get stung because
right, they're all in suits.
They look like all from outer space, all suited up. And they said, how is this man going to do it? Working bees with a t-shirt and dungarees. No veil. Just a smoker and a hive tool. So they were really impressed. And they're getting closer and closer and they're looking and say, wow, this guy's really got magical mysteries here with these bees. He talks to them and everything. So lo and behold, I smoke them up and I said, well, I'm looking at the bees. I'm looking down the frames, looking down the frame. They said, what are you looking for? I says, I'm looking for the frame that has possibly the queen on it. Well, how do you know? I said, well, they're all going to look up at me. And sure enough, there was a frame. All the bees were looking up. So that's a sign that queen is there and they're on a guard, they're on the alert. Something's happening, right? And I took that cover off. Well, I'll tell you, it couldn't have been any better. I could have either lifted up the middle frame or the one on the right or the left because I didn't know which one. I said, all right, out of the three frames in the middle, I pulled out the center one. And lo and behold, there was my marked queen.
There you go.
So they thought, my God, this guy is really great. And I would never be able to do that again.
That's but neat.
It was really, and they were all so happy. And before you know it, they were taking off, opening up their veils because they were getting warm. All talking about the bees, and we went on for, about a good half hour, 45 minutes with questions and answers. And then the honey board had all lunch prepared for them by gourmet chefs on the main patio of Doris Duke's mansion. And we had a nice luncheon that afternoon.
Wow.
With all the 32 or 35 editors. And Mrs. Knowles was the one with the garden and with the seeds. She did the whole thing. So the honey board had everything for us all set up for a meal. From soup to nuts, was everything had honey in it. And they were so fascinated, and they were just writing fast enough to take the articles back home to do their magazine. Because they seen how the honey was processed, and they seen actually how the bees work the beehive, inside the beehive, and who's the queen, who's the male, and all how they all work together. So we were the first ones with a venue to pull off anything like that in Duke's after she passed away, because it was completely closed.
Yeah.
It was all private. So I kind of opened up the doors with the National Honey Board, and now today it's expanded to, you don't believe it, you know?
Yeah, the Duke Estates, they're widely known for their gardens and other
things. Botanical gardens
yes.
and all, yeah. So it was a good venue for the Honey Board to get their point across, yeah.
Thanks. Well, Stan, this has just been an amazing chat. Mm-hmm. 60 years of history you've taken us through. And I think you've seen and done it all.
Yeah.
And you'll continue to keep engaged. And
right. I just don't want to see the bees dying because we need them. Yeah. Every third spoon of food you put into your mouth, you contribute to pollination from the honeybee. So thank God we got the honeybees. And like Mr. Einstein, Dr. Einstein says, or Professor Einstein says, if the bees should perish off the face of this earth, he says it would be only a few years before we pass, because there wouldn't be enough food for us to sustain life on the earth as we know it.
Yeah. So, Stan, I can't thank you enough for taking your afternoon. I know how busy you are. And
well, you're welcome.
I'm going to trouble you after we get done. I want to buy a couple of boxes. Just a couple. I have some winter projects that I want to do, but
no problem. Yeah,
this has been a pleasure. And again,
I'm here to help you, Kevin. I'm here to help all the people in the industry. You want to get involved with bees, well, come to our association and get involved, and we can work you through it and get you going. And you can have your bees and keep a lot of fun. Yeah.
SNF Honey Farms, Wilmington, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to give your phone number or email out. That's your choice. You can tell me later, and mm-hmm. I can put it in as a contact if you want.
Yeah, but you can contact us. We have email. It's my wife is Fran, so we go by fwozatowski@yahoo.com.
Yeah.
And that's our email.
And local beekeepers who want to buy supplies or do whatever, your phone number?
Yeah, you do have phone
business.
Number. Yeah, it's 908-782-7525. And even if we're in Florida or wherever we're at, we always have my cell phone on, so we'll be able to call you back. And also our lines go down to Florida. I recover my calls every day. And people want to know information. So we go from there. So we will definitely get back to you. Yeah, one way or the other.
And you have your
email or phone.
Your minions of people come and take care of your hives at the house here when you're
yeah.
down there in Florida and keep yeah. an eye on things for you. And
yeah,
good for you, Stan. I'm glad you get to go enjoy the Wekiwachi area. Wekiwachi, that's where you are, right?
Florida, yeah.
In Florida. And this has been really a pleasure to be able to talk to you. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, we work bees on Main Street, on Fort Street in Anchorage, Alaska, right there by the Yukon headquarters, Union Oil. We work bees in Hawaii. We've been out there several times.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And then, of course, we went to Apomonia, which we skipped on. That took us to Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania. So we get around with the beekeepers.
Yeah, I'd say.
On a global level, you can get involved.
That is your hobby, right? Is beyond what you do here in the local yard. You're such an active participant globally going to ABF. And
we like to help out. Yeah, we volunteer a lot of our time and services for ABF. My wife,
I think it's really neat that a small scale, relatively. Yeah. I mean, some of these operations are huge.
Yeah.
You're involved at global level. That's just kind of cool. Mm. When we say you know everybody, you actually do know everybody.
Well, pretty much everybody. Everybody.
Pretty close. Yeah.
The new ones I get to meet yet coming up, but we need a lot of research people in our labs and in our universities to want to get into entomology. We really need them.
You're following the CCD and the problems with varroa mite, also seeing, this was my assessment going to EAS with you, that 1 year, that first round of research has come back. People are starting to declare what the problems are, but they're not really hitting on it.
Right.
And it seems like they have more homework to do, right?
Ongoing research, to keep our bees alive. And let them.
And that's really the key, is to support the programs and make sure that we stay vigilant about getting this problem solved. Have you seen the varroa kind of settle down? I don't think it's solved at all, but at least it seems to be somewhat manageable.
Yeah, it's been manageable, yeah. The numbers have come down, yeah. Not when we first got hit back in 86 and it just went rampant all the way up until the last couple of years. Now we're seeing that we're getting a handle on it with the new medication we're putting in the hive, and the medication is put in after the honey is removed.
Yeah.
You cannot medicate any beehive while the medication is applied. All the medication takes place in the winter when we get the bees ready to go in the winter. Or we take all the honey supers off and extract them and store them away so they're not contaminated. Yeah.
Well, we're fortunate to have access to you. Usually gone by now, but this year you're going to hang out till Christmas.
Day after Christmas, right.
we do appreciate having the downtime for you and getting the chance to speak to you. And thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you for all that you've done over the years.
Well, thank you very much for doing an interview on me. I hope it goes well. And people can learn from us, older people and older experienced beekeeper, and we pass it on as much as we can onto you. We don't try to hold anything back because we'd like to see you enjoy your hobby. Or you go into it sideliner or commercial.
Yeah.
We wish you luck.
Thank
you.
I count myself as many, many people who consider you a friend and a mentor, and I thank you again. So thanks, Stan. This has really been
great. Thank you, Kevin, for inviting me and doing a little interview on me. Sorry it took so long.
That's okay.
But it was 60 years there.
60 years is a lot to cover. So. Right. All right, thanks everybody for listening. That's a wrap for this one. We'll catch you on the next episode. Take care and be well.